What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Abundant Journey Podcast. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We are a show that is dedicated to bringing you wisdom from entrepreneurs and investors and telling you the great stories of people who have built pretty amazing things. I am your host, Nick James, as always, and my co-host, Nick Offenkamp. Nick, what's happening, bro?
Hey, man, I am good. It's springtime here in the Pacific Northwest. Everything is in bloom. The only downside to that is that these darn allergies. So, you know, hopefully there's not too much wheezing, coughing, sneezing throughout this episode. And if there are, listeners, please bear with us. It's just the cost of recording in the beautiful Pacific Northwest this time of year. But how are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. I cannot believe that we are, a third of the way through 2024 here, and we are rocking and rolling. Things are moving at Abundant Journey. We've had some amazing guests, and, you know, if anybody's following along on our journey, we are starting to dip our toes into the water of more social media posts. We are dipping our toes into YouTube, and we are starting to get our content out there, which is super exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad that you plugged that. I'm sure we'll talk about this more at some point, but we've recently made the move to expand the team, and we've brought on a video editor, Tristan, who is doing an incredible job.
So good.
Tristan's out of the Philippines, and so I'm sure at some point we'll just talk about what that's looked like for Abundant Journey to go international. But I'm especially excited about the YouTube channel because that can just be so much more of an interactive way to engage with the podcast and engage with our guests. And so if you have been a longtime listener and now want to become a longtime viewer, well, you can absolutely do that by just going to Abundant Journey on YouTube. You'll find us there, and then you can see Nick James's pretty face week in, week out.
You know, and in that, I've been thinking about the fact that I'm no longer going to be able to pick my nose or show up to our episodes with super scruffy hair or no shaved neck because, you know, you got to look glamorous for the camera. That's what they say, at least.
That's what they say. Yeah, it's funny. I actually had that thought this morning as we were getting ready for this. I was like, oh, man, I should probably try to look a little bit better. But alas, here I am just trying to show up. So anyhow, well, man, what's on tap today? It's just you and I. There's no guest. And so what do we have in store?
Well, one of the things you and I have been talking about is that we have been sitting down with these incredible folks for over a year now and have just amazing stories, amazing conversations. But a lot of the concepts have been around the inspiration to get started as an entrepreneur, to take the next steps, to build teams, to dream big. And I've loved that part of the episodes. But one of the things that we've not done a lot of is really diving deeper into the practical tools that got the different entrepreneurs, investors, the people we talk to. We've not spent a lot of time talking about the tools that they've used to get there. And so as we've had some conversations, you know, one, both as a banker, two, as a real estate agent, but three, just having those conversations with people, we've said, man, it'd be great to do some reflection episodes on the practical nuggets that we've heard and maybe draw some of that out in hopes that our listeners or potentially viewers now can ultimately say, hey, how can I implement these kinds of things? And what are the practical steps to start moving forward? So really, I think that's where we're going today.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. And you got something in mind specifically for this episode?
Yeah, you know, one of the things we've continued to hear time and time again is the power of leverage and this concept of leverage. And it's a buzzword, I think, in today's social media world. And I don't think there's a day that goes by that I'm not flipping through something on social media where people talk about using other people's money, or people talk about this vast empire that they've built. And so it's an interesting concept because I think there's a lot of noise around there. But I think that from a banker's perspective, leverage is a phenomenal tool. It's something that is essential to growing a business. But there's also that underbelly or that dark side of, man, we're also seeing every day in the news that people leveraged other people's money to buy large real estate transactions. And all of a sudden, those properties are hurting and people are turning the keys. That's more of a vehicle term, but people are turning in the deed back to the banks and saying, hey, I can't afford this anymore. And so it's interesting because there's two sides to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And leverage is one of those interesting concepts because there's multiple channels or vehicles of leverage when building business and just in life in general. And so certainly there's the financial leverage. You kind of touched on that with other people's money, and we'll dive into that. Bank debt would be another form of leverage. There's a whole conversation around is leveraging debt even a good thing? You know, there's the Dave Ramsey style approach to building wealth and building a business that says, hey, you should avoid debt pretty much at all costs. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Robert Kiyosaki, who would recommend going into debt to purchase assets for a number of reasons, and would say that, you know, if you're not leveraging debt, then you're seriously cutting yourself at the knees when it comes to your potential for growth. So there's a whole conversation around that, which we'll dive into.
Totally.
But what are the other kinds of leverage that come to mind for you as well when you think about building a business?
Yeah, it's funny because as we homeschool, I've done some different science stuff with my daughters. And I was thinking back in science how it talks about the different types of levers and how, you know, the classic image of you put the stick under the rock and you have another rock underneath it and you can push on the stick to lift something much heavier than you would normally be able to lift if you just went over and tried to pick up the boulder. And yes, I went from rock to boulder, but, you know, for the sake of the image, we understand that concept. And so I think that really, if we look at leverage as a whole, as it pertains to business, it's really utilizing money, people, or resources to put you in an opportunity that you couldn't be in without it. And so one of the things that when people get started in business, you have to leverage different things. It might be other people's skills. It might be other people's financial wherewithal. It might be other people's experience and learning and getting wisdom from them. You know, it could be leveraging other people's resources. And so there's a whole slew of different types of leverage. But I think one of the things that we can universally agree on is that looking with an open eye for finding other people, finding other resources to help you get and grow and get to that next level, that's something that leverage does well. And I think you and I have really done that here as we've leveraged relationships to get conversations. One of the things we love doing is asking our guests, hey, who else is in your circle and who else is in your sphere who would be a great fit for the podcast? And we've gotten referral after referral. And so, you know, you and I might have a network of 50 or 100 people who we think would be a great fit for the podcast. But really, you begin to realize the network is infinite when we tap into other people's networks and try to get their friends and their great guests on the show too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that simple image of just going back to scientifically speaking, what a lever is and where it really is a shortcut in a sense. It's a way of reducing the amount of effort to get an outsized outcome, a much greater outcome than you could. And I'm glad that you mentioned the leveraging of relationships. Now that can have a really bad connotation. And so we should probably, you know, qualify what that means. But leveraging resources as well. Like I think about the leveraging of technology, right? Like there's so many tools that we use even for this podcast that make our life so much easier when it comes to using a tool even like Canva to be able to create the podcast image or to create some social media posts. It's like you and I did not get degrees in graphic design. You know, we know very, very little about how to actually, you know, do any sort of technical design work. And yet there's this technology that has allowed us to be able to create things that at least have somewhat of a professional feel that are outsized in comparison to our actual knowledge or experience. And I think that that's a powerful thing to realize as you're building a business. What are the tools and resources that are available to you that are going to be shortcuts to taking, you know, potentially years and years off of the journey of what you feel like you may need to learn in order to grow a business? Well, if there's tools that are already doing those things for you and all you need to learn is how to use the tool, then you can save yourself a lot of time, money, effort, tears, by not having to figure some of that out.
Well, and I love that you bring that up, and I would honestly double down on that, because there's a lot of people that I know, and I've found myself as well, you know, even just with house projects, trying to use the wrong tool to get something done. Man, it's like trying to use a screwdriver to hit a nail in. And it's just, it's, can you get there? Yeah. I mean, it's going to look terrible and you're going to be exhausted. But at the end of the day, the tools are out there. And I think as the world continues to evolve and opportunities continue to come so quickly with technology, there's not only are you delaying your journey and making it more difficult, but on top of that, there's a good chance you're going to be left behind. I think the people that are quickest to adopting these tools, you know, I think about it from a perspective as you and I, we've done some driving for dollars with house flipping. And for our audience who doesn't know, it's driving around, it's looking for properties that are distressed that you want to send out mailers or reach out to the owners to see if they want to purchase that. Well, again, thinking about tools and thinking about leverage, there are some apps out there that literally you can click on the house. It drives with you almost like a Google Maps. You click on the house, you can click send mail right there. When I first started doing that, I was writing down addresses on a piece of paper. And then, you know, you think about me doing that and then having to go back to the computer and then having to build out an Excel spreadsheet and then having to figure out a way how to mail. Or I can literally download the app. I can drive, I can click send mail from my phone while we're driving. Think about the efficiency, think about the effectiveness. And so that's, again, one of those things like you're talking about is leveraging tools.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, when you think about like what's the relative cost of using that app versus the, like how much would you save if you were to go to the extra effort of writing it all out, putting it in Excel, and then, you know, finding the cheapest possible way to send out mailers. Have you looked into that math at all?
I haven't. You know, it's interesting with those systems. It's like 65 cents a mailer, and stamps are around the same price. And so if you were going to handwrite, you're going to print up a letter, you're going to fold it in the envelope, you're going to write the envelope address. I mean, you think about that and then you think about how stamps alone are about the same cost. Yeah. I mean, gosh, it's a no-brainer. So there's all kinds of stuff out there like that.
Yeah. And that's exactly proving my point is just what I was getting at. And this illustrates it well. It's just that So often the reason that we'll avoid leverage is just because we assume that there's going to be higher costs associated with the convenience. But when you think about the value of your time, and especially when you're working on building a business and you want to be actually the one who's working on it, not in it, then it's really important to know what the value of your time is and look for all kinds of things that you can leverage so that you can spend the majority of your time working on the highest value tasks, the things that you're best at, the things that you enjoy the most, the things that you really can't hand off or leverage in other ways, so that the lower value tasks are, you know, being taken care of themselves, or at least in a much more efficient way, even if that's slightly more more costly than if you were to do it yourself. It's a funny thing of trying to measure those costs, because while maybe you could save 3 or 4 cents per mailer, when you really factor in how much your time is worth, it's actually going to cost you way more to make your own Excel sheet and print everything off and write it out.
Well, I think in that too, you know, that goes back to the relationship piece and the people piece. And I wanted to circle back to that, but that's the difference that I've seen so often between small business owners as a banker and commercial large businesses, is that the guys running multi-million, multi-billion dollar companies, those guys have learned to leverage relationships and people and skill set and draw that out. Whereas your small business owner, they oftentimes don't ever get out of that mode. They have that mentality or that posture, well, I'm going to do it the best. Nobody can do it like me. I just want to, you know, have all hands and control on it. And so what ends up happening is that those people work themselves into a job, whereas the large business owner, and I say large just in terms of revenue size and growth and trajectory of their business, that business owner has learned how to leverage people really well. But you said something where I did want to go back to it as it pertains to Abundant Journey. Leveraging people, you're right, it can have a dirty connotation. And I think there are people who leverage relationships to try and push others down and get a leg up. But it's interesting, one of the quotes that you and I have really clung to over and over as we've built Abundant Journey is that old proverb of, hey, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And what I love about the guests and I love about the people that we've had on is there's this shared belief that we're better together. And so we're leveraging each other's relationships, wisdom, experience, but it's not to push each other down and try to see who goes further, but it truly is to reach behind, help one another forward, and propel this thing and really build this community around that.
Yeah. Well, and a good, I think, example of that is you could talk about ways that we leverage each other in building this show, right? Like there's you are a masterful networker and do a phenomenal job. 95% of the guests that we have on this show are because you have made the calls, reached out, lined up the interviews, and you also do a fantastic job when it comes to following up with people and keeping the network strong and tight, which are things that I'm frankly, you know, terrible at. And so you could say that, well, as part of the Abundant Journey podcast, rather than me have to go and strengthen an area that I'm really weak in order to grow the show, I'm able to leverage your natural skill at those things in order for the show to continue. And I think, you know, vice versa, there's ways where with the audio editing and just more the back end.
I don't want to touch any of that. I just like to talk to people.
And lest anyone think that that's a self-congratulating kind of thing, I was actually going to go with, and that's why we've hired Tristan, is because now we do have a real expert on the team.
That's right.
We're you know, being able to leverage his skill and experience in doing these things. And that's something that he's passionate about doing, and being able to say, all right, hey, you're better at this. You know, why don't you take this and grow it? And I think that in healthy leveraging of relationships, there is a good, like, mutual benefit to both sides, or at least that's something that you should be aware of.
Yep.
That when you're leveraging relationships, you're not just looking at what you can get out of the relationship,
sure,
but you're seeing, hey, you're recognizing what other people are really good at, what they've cultivated skills in, and you're honoring the skill that they have. But you also want to be aware of, okay, in addition to just, you know, asking for them to help in this certain area, like, how are we reciprocating that ask, whether that's through generous compensation for their time, or whether that's through being willing to leverage the areas where we, or where you as the listener, are more skilled to help that person out as well.
Yep. One of my favorite parts of getting our guests on is the ability to cross connect guests. And, you know, it's been really cool to see whether, you know, we've had investors on, and then they say, hey, you know, do you know anybody in self-storage? And we've connected them with self-storage people, or we've had some business coaches or CPAs or attorneys on. And I know those names are popping into your mind as I share them, but the beauty of cross-connecting our guests has been such a fun piece of this, because that is that give and take. And I think so often in a world that's very focused on what can I get, that is one of the things I'm so proud of within Abundant Journey, is that we're building this community of givers. And recognition, it starts with our guests who have built their businesses around giving. I think about the Stagerbergs, where, you know, you ever get Nick on the phone, he's like, what can I do to provide the most value to you today? I mean, that's how he starts every phone call.
Right.
And so just that radical generosity, I think, just oozes from our guests. And I love their spirit of generosity, because that truly is different in a world that is just so focused on what can I get.
Yeah, 100%. Even the generosity of their time just to come on the show. And I think, you know, thinking a bit further on the relational leverage, there are certainly ways in which you've kind of got peer-to-peer leverage. But there's also, when you're just getting started out in business, like, one of the ultimate forms of leveraging relationships, I think, is coaching, where you can hire somebody who has gone before you to be a paid mentor, somebody that you can come to with all of your questions. And really, what coaching is it's leveraging the experience and knowledge and learning and even relational network of somebody else to help you get to where you ultimately want to go. Hopefully that person's going to save you from years and tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars of making mistakes. And so, again, coaching, especially good coaching, can be really expensive, but there can also be an outsized return by having a good coach in your corner. And so I know that for a lot of our listeners, for you, as you're thinking about starting a business, perhaps one of the best ways that you can leverage relationships is by finding somebody who has walked the path that you're wanting to go down, who's done so successfully, and approaching them about formalizing a coaching or mentoring sort of relationship.
Well, and how many times have we had conversations with our guests that they leveraged those coaching and mentor relationships and credit the entire trajectory of their business and their whole story of success on the fact that either they had peer mentors or straight up mentors or coaches that they hired and they learned from. And I think over and over we've heard that. And I think that's why we like to draw that question out, is who's been in your circle that was influential in your success story? Because, man, I just don't think you find success on your own. I just think you have to leverage those relationships. And you're right. Sometimes it's very costly. But the counter to that is, well, they probably have an opportunity to save you from extremely costly mistakes, but also they will propel you so much further in your business by being in the room with those kinds of people. So I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you want to talk to how to leverage debt or leverage finances? Because I think that that's probably, perhaps more than anything, what's top of mind for folks when it comes to leverage and how to be strategic. Maybe we can get into the kind of conversation of, you know, pretending we've got Dave Ramsey and Robert Kiyosaki on, let's anticipate the kind of conversation that they would have with one another, and where do we land on the wisdom in leveraging debt?
You know, I love that, and I think I'll start with the fact that most people don't really spend their time thinking about how banks use money, but banks leverage money all the time. And what they do is people put their deposits with banks, and banks turn around and lend people's money out. And so banks have a P&L or an income statement and a balance sheet just like everybody else. But theirs is opposite from everybody, because they take money in, they turn around and they leverage that out to lend and then create fees and create income. And that's how banks work. And so when we start with leverage, it's an interesting concept, because most of the time people say, hey, I'm going to go to the bank and borrow money, or I'm going to go to this person or this organization and borrow money to grow my business. Well, banks are doing the exact same thing. Hmm. So it's an interesting concept in that regard. You know, it's funny. I think with if we had Kiyosaki and Ramsey sitting at the table, both of us would be a little intimidated at this point. But I do think the concepts are pretty clear. You know, Dave Ramsey draws on this understanding of, hey, debt is bad. All debt is bad. All debt is equal. You should never be in a position to be in debt. And then Robert Kiyosaki would say, hey, I leverage debt, and I have continued to leverage debt millions and millions upon dollars. And it's allowed me to build my empire, my business. It's allowed me to grow far beyond what I could ever do. And so I think those are the two schools of thought. And I think a lot of people fall in between. I'm curious, maybe some, where do you fall with it? What are some thoughts you have as you think about leveraging money, bank debt? What, and maybe even your background and what you saw growing up?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki was a really eye-opening work when it came to the power of leveraging debt, because I grew up in a home that really emphasized more of the Dave Ramsey approach to debt, which I think is it's fundamentally sound, right? Like there's you have a lot less risk personally when you're not deep in debt. You own what you own, and you don't have creditors that can come after you because you don't have relationships with creditors. But what really struck me in Rich Dad, Poor Dad was that not all debt is created equal. And so growing up, I was really only aware of debt to purchase a home, debt to purchase a car, or debt, credit card debt, consumer debt.
Purchase a new TV.
Purchase a new TV, or fund that Costco run, and which you know,
we don't got to go there.
yeah. The TV would be cheaper. So with consumer debt, where you're buying generally depreciating assets, I can hear Dave Ramsey's concern in that of that. Hey, you're paying $100 for something today that tomorrow is worth $75 and a month later is only worth $50. All the while, if you don't pay that thing off right away, you're paying interest. So now in a month where that thing's only worth $50, you're now paying $130 for it. That's a losing equation when it comes to building math, when it comes to building wealth. Especially when you think about larger numbers, you start talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. Well, if you're buying depreciating assets on debt and paying interest on those things, like, you're going to ruin yourself financially in a real hurry. But Robert Kiyosaki's approach to debt is, he would agree, you shouldn't finance or use credit to buy things that are depreciating. But when you're able to buy appreciating assets, things like real estate or businesses, well, then there's all kinds of power that comes through leveraging debt. Because if what you're buying, let's just say, you know, we'll use that $100 example, you buy something with debt for $100, but in a month, that same asset that you've purchased is worth $200. And with your interest, your obligations are now only $150. It's like, well, you've leveraged debt to make $50 more. And again, when you're talking at scale, you blow that up. It's like, well, that's a path to millions of dollars. So that's, I think, principle number one is you use debt to purchase appreciating assets, or at least things that historically have always appreciated. And then downstream of that, there are all kinds of other advantages to using debt to purchase appreciating assets, like how tax advantaged debt is. And you're far more well versed in the tax advantages of debt, so I'll kick it back over to you in just a second to really speak to that. But then the third part of that is that you do reduce your personal risk, because part of why you pay interest on something that you're financing is because there's a risk of you not making repayment, and whoever it is that's putting up the money is the one who's taking on additional risk with that debt, with that asset that you're purchasing. So tax advantages, reduction of personal risk, and then the final piece that comes to mind for me is just that it's like, well, if I want to buy five different things and they all cost $100, and I only have $100 or whatever, well, that's tough. Then I got to wait until I can purchase all five. But if it's an amazing opportunity and somebody is willing to allow me to just put 20% down on each of those things, then I could actually buy all five using my $20 and financing the remaining 80% on all of those, which just allows, as a business owner, it allows you to grow your business, or if you're investing in real estate, it allows you to grow your real estate portfolio so much quicker than if you were to just do everything with your own cash and never leverage any sort of debt. So at a high level, those are what I see as the advantages. There's certainly things that I'm using even in my own business as I've started the Tartan team. There's ways that I'm leveraging debt with a vehicle that I purchased under the Tartan team name because of the way that that's tax advantaged for me. Ways that I'm purchasing different technologies and software, and using a little bit of business debt to cover those things in order to build the business faster than I could otherwise. So those are like small scale examples, but certainly There have been ways to leverage debt that have seemed to me to be very financially responsible, and that as we're talking about the whole idea of leverage, right, is getting an outsized result. And so it's saving me a lot of time and therefore making me more money than if I were to not be using debt. So I don't know what you want to stir in there. I certainly would love for you to speak to the tax advantages of utilizing debt. But what comes to mind as I go on that tirade on the advantages of leveraging debt?
I think you said that well. That's what comes to mind. And really that understanding between consumer debt, and you started with talking about that, and then business debt. And I've had that conversation with people many times, because when you want to start out as a business owner, or you want to be an entrepreneur and you want to build something, you oftentimes don't have a lot of resources at your disposal most of the time. Right. And when that's the case, you have to leverage money and you have to leverage debt to get started. And I think about that, one, from a practical standpoint, to your point, if, let's say you wanted to start a cleaning company, like a carpet cleaning company. Well, you're going to need vehicles, and you're going to need vacuums, and you're going to need, you know, you could list out a lot of things. Well, if you don't have any money, you can't get started unless you borrow that money. And the business itself, as you build relationships and you do sales and you complete jobs, that's going to pay for the debt. That is such a different utilization and leveraging of money than, like you're saying, I'm going to go put a vacation on a credit card, or I'm going to go buy a hot tub on a credit card. That is so different, because you're generating money by borrowing money with business debt versus consumer debt, where you are simply buying shiny things that you want, that you'll find enjoyment in, but they don't provide any sort of compensation or return. And I think that's a huge, huge point, because a lot of times people listen to that Dave Ramsey concept, they don't realize that there are different kinds of debt. And within that, one, from a practical standpoint, just getting started or growing your business, you need to oftentimes utilize debt to get started. But there's an interesting argument I like to bring in within using business debt, is there's, I think, a moral or an ethical argument to be made that you think about people who, like farmers, or you think about people who are providing to the community goods, services, products that make a difference in the world, that feed us, that provide medical benefits. And you think about the fact that, hey, if you have a skill set and you want to go and you want to plant and you want to grow crops and you want to provide food for people who are struggling, what an incredible opportunity to build a business around that and to build something that people have a need for. And so you can say, well, I hate debt, and I can't buy seeds, and I can't buy a tractor, and I can't buy XYZ, so I'll never do that. But what an incredible opportunity to really leverage money to build a business to then that does provide goods and services. And so I think a lot of times it's easy to say, well, all debt is bad. Well, yeah, if you're going, and I think we know as Americans, we love swiping that credit card where we can't afford things. And there are tons of problems that have come with that in our country, in our households, in our own personal budgets. But there's also using that debt and using that money to really create or build or grow something phenomenal that can benefit others.
Yeah. No, I think that's well said. And that it's so many people would never get started with their entrepreneurial dreams if they had a hard-lined principle of that, I'm just never gonna leverage debt, and that I've gotta save up the money to get started first. And really, I mean, that's like the whole student loan, student debt. I mean, that's kind of a whole can of worms in terms of just the costs of education and how crazily things have gotten more expensive there. But the long time idea of that, even the debt to get your education, to acquire the skills so that you can provide a good or a service to society, has long been understood as again, where you get that outsized return where, yeah, you're going into a bit of debt for your education, but over the long haul, that upfront debt is going to open up far more profitable or lucrative opportunities for you, both personally as well as providing a good for the community, for the world. That's a helpful qualification. And I mean, talk to me about the Kiyosaki's huge on just the tax advantages of debt. And so what does he mean by that? Like, why? And, you know, I've heard you talk to about what's the 10x guy, Grant Cardone, and him, you know, getting what was it, a $40 million tax free or something like that. And so, you know, what's going on with the tax advantages to debt?
Well, obviously, I'm not a CPA, so most of my experience comes from being a banker and just seeing how other business owners have done it. And so there's all different kinds of advantages within that sphere, both for your business, also with real estate. And I would encourage you guys to connect with CPAs, grab them a coffee and say, hey, like, as I'm growing my business, as I'm starting my business, what are the ways to run this the most effective and efficiently? One of the things that is pretty unique is that business owners, they are taxed on the net profit that the business makes, which is the bottom line, once all the expenses have been paid. That's pretty unique because what I've seen is that as you get benefits for multiple write-offs, your taxes decrease. And we see that a little bit when we file. It's tax season, so we file our taxes, and what are the write-offs that lowers your income so your tax bracket is lower. And that just kicks over in the business. And so one of the things, it's called Section 179, and it's around equipment, and it's purchasing equipment, and there are tax advantages to that. Again, talk to your CPA. I think as it pertains to the real estate side of things, you know, one, you can depreciate different assets, and that impacts, you know, the income or the profitability of the business. And as it pertains to your taxes, you also oftentimes get to write off your interest payments that you make on the real estate. So that's a big one. But I think as we've had some recent conversations and you're kind of alluding to it, one of the things is that, and you and I have heard so many stories about how people will buy real estate, the value of the real estate goes up, and then they cash out, refinance that property. And when they do that, they pull money off because how to geek out on math for just a minute here, you get a property and then it goes up in value. Well, banks will typically lend like a 60 to 80%. They'll give you a loan based on the value of 60 to 80% of the total value. Well, if the property goes from being worth $1 million to $2 million, the value's gone up and you can pull more money off of that. Now, there's so many nuances within that, but how that works is you can then pull money out from that property, and that's ultimately tax-free money because what it is it's considered debt. You're pulling a larger piece of debt. You're putting that money in your bank account. And what we've seen time and time again with our guests is they do that and then they turn around and buy another property. And so they begin to multiply their properties and multiply their real estate because real estate typically appreciates and goes up in value. And as that goes up, they pull money off of it They get that money and then they multiply it. And we have had guests on the show that not only have mastered that, but what they've done is they buy properties way under value. They improve the properties, make them worth way more, and then they're able to pull a considerable amount of money off.
And that money that they pull off is tax-free, right? Like, it's different than if they were to sell the property and be liable for capital gains. Right. Explain that concept to me. Like, why is it tax-free when you do a cash-out refi versus if you were to sell it?
Well, a cash-out refi is ultimately debt. You're increasing your debt load on that property. So if you have a property that is $1 million and you've bought and you have a loan on there, you've put your 20% down, your $200,000, and then you have a loan for $800,000. Well, then the property appreciates to $2 million. And then all of a sudden you can do 80% of the $2 million and you refinance that loan. You've increased the debt. And so you haven't made income on the property. Mm-hmm. Now, you can look at it as, well, I'm putting money into my bank account. I can utilize that and leverage that money. But it's treated because it is debt. You've increased your debt load. Whereas if you sell a piece of property, then that's just money you've made. You've made profits based on paying all of the debt off that's on the property. And what money is left? Well, that's profits. And so the government looks at that and says, well, you had a capital gain. You had a gain in the sale of this and it's and you've made money off of it. So that's why you hear and you and I continue to have conversations with guests that say, don't ever sell your properties because they continue to go up. We saw a social media influencer recently. He sold something and I don't remember the numbers, but it was like, he ended up selling it and it just sold for $500,000 more than he sold it for within a couple of years. If he would have held on to it and he would have cash out refinanced it, he would still have that property. He would still have tax advantages. He would still have it appreciating in value and he could leverage the money that the property has generated for him.
Yeah. No, that's super helpful. I appreciate you unpacking that. And that's definitely one of the less obvious, but the superpower to leveraging debt, and especially in real estate. That's why so many investors are in real estate, is because of how tax advantaged it is in comparison to many other assets. And so for our listeners, if this is something that you're curious about, I mean, we've had a lot of episodes with different real estate investors on. I think of Travis Watts or Bronson Hill. Those guys, I think, did a great job of unpacking some of these advantages in greater detail. Yeah. And I think that you made a good point in this earlier too, of talking to a CPA. That's another relationship to have and to leverage in order to benefit your business. That's one of those professional services that, again, an outsized return, whereby having a good CPA in your corner, on your team, they are going to bring far more value to you and to your business than whatever it is that they charge for their time and service.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, as we wrap this thing up, I think it would be great to talk about maybe some nuggets of wisdom or some cautionary tales against over leverage, or maybe just kind of that dark side of, you know, the what if it goes wrong. And I think it would be wise to do that with our listeners, because for all of the noise out there and everything we're talking about, man, there are some situations where you can really ruin your financial perspective. And I think, you know, some people know this, maybe not everybody, but that is why Dave Ramsey has taken the approach and the position that he has. We talk a lot about him, but he had used leverage and built a vast business and then lost it all and realized how much he was in debt. And so he set out to restart and not ever doing that again. And so I think there is caution and there is wisdom around this. What are some things you've seen, maybe some stories you've heard or lessons learned on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting just even in real estate over the past 3 or 4 years where we've seen interest rates go from historic lows to historic highs in just the span of a couple of years. And I know that we've talked with a lot of folks that have been in multifamily real estate, and they started raising money for big projects. They got variable rate debt, and they had just kind of assumed that you can't lose in real estate. And then 2 years later, when the rate got adjusted, all of a sudden their property either no longer cash flows, or now it's so much more expensive to build that they're underwater in it, and they're not able to pay their debts or their obligations, and it's hurting their own credibility. It's certainly creating a lot of personal stress, but then it's also, you know, putting their lenders, their partners, their banks in a really tough position as well, because they can't make the debt payment. And so that's certainly a part of it where people can have rose-colored glasses when it comes to debt, and you can over-leverage. I mean, you can put that fulcrum point on the lever. You can move that so close to you that you actually, you know, the stick breaks. It's not enough to lift the boulder, and then somebody else is stuck with it, and you come out looking awful.
Yep.
And that's not only terrible financially, but then it also hurts a lot of your relationships. Yep. and really is a major setback moving into the future. Yep. So that's one that comes to mind for me that's been increasingly common in the real estate space. How about you? What are ways that you've seen leverage in either business or investing go wrong?
I think that example is great. I think and rather than do another example, because that is one of the big ones that comes to mind, and we are going to see more and more of that in the next few years. I think another piece to that is the education part that we spend a lot of time talking about. I think about when we had Joette on, and she's an attorney, and we talked so much about the necessity for education. And there's so many bad actors out there. There's so many programs that say, hey, come do what I did and you'll be successful too. And it's interesting because we've had conversations on this podcast with people who are close to those gurus or experts. And off the mic in those conversations, those people are saying, hey, oh yeah, no, they're sweating on how their portfolio is looking or how their properties, they're not doing well, or, you know, they've raised money from their friends and family and the property isn't producing the amount of money that it has, it's supposed to be. And so they're actually going back to investors asking for more money. And so I think my words of wisdom, just based on the conversations that we've had, is that you need to really understand what you're doing and you really need to educate yourself. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with really good mentors and coaches who have a significant sound track record with what they've done. Those are the people you want to listen to. And of course, do they align in values and do they align in purpose? But, you know, early in my real estate journey, I was pretty quickly getting swept up in some conversations with people who ended up being bad actors and their portfolio didn't look like what they said it did. And there was dishonesty going around. And so that was a pretty good gut check early on for me. And so I would say, really educate yourself. Really, really think through and learn, like you said, from people who've done this well. And that's one of those pillars that I think that can protect you. And, you know, as we think about leverage, I think there's other pillars. You know, I think back on Joe Fairless's real estate syndication book. He talks about how you need to have adequate reserves. You need to have the rainy day savings account for when things go bad, not if they ever will, but when they go bad. Another thing you mentioned it is securing long-term debt, not floating interest rate debt. And so many people secured floating debt in the last couple of years. And as property values didn't increase, but debt interest rates increased, the price of properties have gone up. One last one, I know I'm rattling these off, but I'm passionate as I think about them. We had Joel Anderson on the podcast and his dad, I remember, they have bought so much real estate. But David Anderson always said, hey, I'm not going to go over 50% loan to value. So if I personally can't buy something and only get 50% debt, that gives him such a cushion if values of properties go down. So I just think in terms of debt and in terms of leveraging, there's different pillars to protect yourself. Now, can you always protect yourself from every scenario? No, that's why one, it's risk, but you also can't protect yourself from going out and getting in the car and getting in a car accident. There's risk in life. There's just risk and there always will be. But as it pertains to business, as it pertains to investing, there are different pillars, mentorship, you know, savings accounts, those different things we're talking about here that really can hedge and protect against those downfalls.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's well said, that that it's a wisdom call and there aren't really hard and fast rules here, but you know, there's another way of saying that there's no one way to do it right, but there's a million ways to do it wrong. And so you do want to be careful. You want to don't over leverage yourself. And definitely don't, you know, chase, you got to be aware of the sunk cost fallacy as well, where there's just so many people that will continue to throw good money after bad to try and dig themselves out of a hole. And so it's far better, you know, when you do find yourself in a situation, with leverage or with debt to be honest, to be upfront, to get your partners involved with what's going on early, to start those conversations and to figure out a way out, a way forward together, as opposed to, I don't know, when things go sideways with debt, I think that it really starts to play into people's shame. And when it starts to go sideways, then people make a series of even worse decisions and get themselves into an even worse spot. Yeah. And so maybe we can do a follow-up episode at some point on, you know, okay, what do you do when debt goes wrong, when the business goes sideways, when the economy doesn't go the way that you expect or hope that it will. Yeah. But I think there's some really helpful fundamental principles to thinking about leverage, to thinking about debt. I think that it's helpful to just look at your network and look at the relationships that you have, the professionals that are around you, the different people with different skills, the relationships that they have, and think about how you can leverage those, not in a manipulative way, but in a way that seeks to provide mutual value. Yeah. Thinking about ways to leverage different resources and different technologies to help you grow your business, grow your portfolio faster than you could if you were trying to do it all by yourself. And then thinking about the different ways that that debt is advantaged when it comes to purchasing assets that historically appreciate and have a higher return on value than what you're paying in interest, and all of the advantages to using debt to obtain those kind of assets. So I think there's a lot of good stuff here, and I know that as you and I are both continuing to build and grow our own things, even outside of Abundant Journey, we'll have more stories coming in the future of different ways that we're actively using leverage in our lives and in our business to grow. Yeah. So more to come on those fronts as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good word. I've enjoyed the discussion. Again, you know, I think leverage has been one of those concepts that has really shown up in every episode that we've had with our guests. And it's just looked different. But there, you know, as we were kind of putting this together today, you know, what's the takeaway for our listener? And I wrote it down here. I mean, I think there's a couple questions for you to ask yourself. One is, are there roadblocks? What are the roadblocks right now in my way of what I want and what I'm trying to pursue, what I'm trying to build, and how can I leverage money, relationships, or skills around that? And so we've really hit, I think, those topics. But you, listener, thanks for coming along with us on the journey today. But I would say, ask yourself, hey, what are the roadblocks or what are the biggest problems or the struggles or the challenges that are either holding me back or just preventing me from growing? How can I leverage those different things we've talked about today to get past that hurdle? I think that's one thing. And then really, what are some types of leverage you can implement now, which will allow you to the chance to free things off of your plate? And we didn't really dive into it as it pertains to the five F's of Abundant Journey and leverage. We didn't really talk about that today. It might be fun to do that at some point. But we did kind of touch on that working in your business versus on your business. And I think there are, we continue to really dive into that with our guests of the things that they're most passionate about. And are there ways to leverage what we've talked about today to free things up off your plate so you can give more, so you can grow more, so you can spend more time with family, so you can invest in the things that you're passionate about? A lot of times, and like maybe kind of what we were saying with the mailers, you know, do you want to spend hours handwriting mailers when you can get your time back by sending those virtually or sending those by clicking a button, so then you have more time to invest in the things you're passionate about? So just another thing I think for our listeners to really press into and ask themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And my final thought, just as you're saying that, is that it a lever only becomes leverage once you use it. And so, you know, having the money that you freed up from debt, or having the relationships, having knowledge, that's all good and well, but it's not actually leverage until you put it to work. Yeah. And so as you, listener, have gathered some things from this podcast episode here, I hope that you're able to leverage the information that we've shared and use it to grow yourself, to grow your business, to grow in your own journey towards greater abundance.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for hanging out with us. We will be back shortly with another episode with some guests. And as always, we'll see you next time.